equal access for the blind to education. How long and how hard have we worked on this topic? Sometimes when we address the topic of education, such as in Baltimore, Maryland, we find that there are 133 students in the school district, and 6 of them are learning Braille, which means that about 125 aren't, and there's no way to change it. And then we find that inaccessible technology is deployed in the school systems. And some of the people from the Department of Education tell us, well, it's all right to have inaccessible technology there because if there comes to be a blind person, then we'll get one piece of accessible technology. It'll be separate. It won't be equal. It won't be the same. But there's no way to change it. That's what the Department of Education tells us. So we want equal access for the blind to education, and we have the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Policy of the Office of Civil Rights of the United States Department of Education to come tell us how to get it. Here is Deputy Assistant Secretary Seth Galanter.
Thank you, everyone, and thank you for inviting me. Thank you for the introduction, Doctor. It's going to be hard to compete with the last speaker, but I will try, and I hope you applaud occasionally for me. And if you don't, no, that was a cheap applause line. I bring greetings from the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, and my immediate boss, Ruslan Ali, the Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights. This morning, I would like to talk about keeping the lines of communication open. Now, you may not know this, but lines of communication is actually a military term. It means routes of travel for supplies and vehicles. Keeping the lines of communication open is critical to winning a war. Without support coming in for the troops, you can't win. Now, why am I telling you this? Well, first of all, because I'm from the Department of Education and we like to teach people things. The second thing is because it's also, when I consider the work the department has done that involves the blind community and working with the blind community, I think about 3 areas where we've worked over the past 3 years to keep the lines of communication open: the fight against discrimination, the fight against Braille illiteracy, and the fight against misunderstanding. Now let's talk about the fight against discrimination first. President Obama has set a goal that the United States will lead the world in college graduates by 2020. As my boss, Secretary Duncan, has said, the president's goal requires us to enable every single American, regardless of income, race, background, or disability, to reach their potential. Now, we're making progress to that goal. President Obama has made college more affordable by doubling the number of Pell Grants, increasing the number of recipients from 6 million to 9 million over the past 3 years. And the amount of the maximum grant has also increased $900. But that, you're welcome. It's imperative that all students, including those with disabilities, have the tools they need to benefit from our higher education system. Education that prepares them for success in college, in careers, and as citizens. If we're going to meet the president's goal, then every current and future student has to have access to a complete and competitive education. Now, I work in the Office for Civil Rights at the department, and we are all about access. We enforce Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act and the Americans with the Disabilities Act as applied to schools and libraries. And over the past 3 years, we've been actively and aggressively enforcing these laws. We've been acting by issuing guidance, by doing proactive investigations of institutions where we think there's a problem, and by responding to complaints, and on behalf of individuals and by organizations such as the Federation. I just want to take a brief moment to say that when we get a complaint from the Federation, it's actually kind of exciting for us because it's a mix of we know that it's going to be well written, it's going to raise really tough issues and be on the cutting edge of the law. And of course, that's also a little scary, but that's why we're good friends, I think. And last year, we got about 7,000 complaints from all across the country, and about half of them related to disability discrimination. Now, sometimes we get results just by making inquiries, you know, by opening the lines of communication. Just this year, we received a complaint about a library in California that had computers with internet access, and they were available to the public, but the mobility-impaired accessible computer wasn't accessible to people with visual impairments. We gave a call, we sent a letter. Shortly after we began our investigation, the library installed a new large screen monitor on the accessible computer and installed screen reader software and magnification software, and it was accessible. Now, the same thing happens, and we're pleased when it does, when we receive and resolve complaints by blind parents who want school documents translated into Braille. And again, usually just opening the lines of communication is enough, a nudge to get the school to do what they're supposed to do under the law. Now, other issues are going to take more work. Now, one, and we're going to need a steady supply to make it work. You may have heard about the department's efforts to eliminate bullying and harassment in schools. The reason is simple. As my boss has said, kids can't learn if they don't feel safe. And kids with disabilities are often targeted for bullying, and that's pretty horrendous given the amount of just general bullying there is out there. And from the president on down, the administration has made clear that bullying is no longer to be tolerated as a rite of passage that everyone has to experience. Through grants and through enforcement, we are making sure that school districts are taking steps to prevent and to remedy bullying and discriminatory harassment. And it, as you know, it really has caught the public eye recently. There have been a series of suicides of very young people linked to bullying and harassment, and it is a major priority of the department and of this my office to see that we eliminate and reduce bullying to the extent we can. Now, another one of our efforts that's going to take more work, and Dr. Mora mentioned it, has been focused on assuring that educational institutions think about and provide accessibility technology to ensure they're not creating new discriminatory barriers. Now, working with our colleagues at the Department of Justice, and I know you're going to get to hear from them this afternoon, we issued a guidance letter in 2010 regarding the obligations of colleges and universities to assure that emerging technology is accessible to people with disabilities, with visual impairments and other impairments that make it difficult for them to use printed materials. We explained in that guidance that under the federal civil rights laws, students must be afforded the opportunity to acquire the same information, engage in the same interactions, and enjoy the same services as sighted students with substantially equivalent ease of use. Now, relying on these principles, we, that is the Department of Justice and my office, were able to resolve a number of complaints filed by your federation regarding the universities that were asking or requiring students to use the Kindle DX. In the settlements, the universities agreed not to ask or require students to, or I'm sorry, agreed not to purchase, require, or recommend the Kindle DX or any other inaccessible ebook reader unless or until the device is fully accessible to individuals who are blind, or the university provide reasonable accommodation or modification so that the student can acquire the same information, engage in the same interactions, and enjoy the same services. And then in 2011, last year, we followed up with an email to every school district in the country, making clear that these rules applied not just at higher education, but also at the elementary and secondary level. And the value, and again, I think Dr. Mora was referring to this, is if you build in accessibility at the beginning, it is so much easier to come into compliance with the civil rights laws. Today and in the future, all students are going to need the best education possible, both for individual success and for our national success. We want to encourage the promise of these new technologies, this innovation, to enhance educational opportunities for all students by ensuring the realization of the promise includes students with disabilities. Now, this nicely segues to the second point I wanted to talk about the fight against Braille illiteracy. And we know that technology alone is not going to be enough to get our kids to read. Reading is fundamental, whether it's reading print or reading Braille. A kid who can't read at all is going to have an uphill struggle taking advantage of all the opportunities that America has. The department is addressing the problem of limited Braille literacy in a number of different ways. We recognize there's a shortage of qualified teachers of Braille. That's why the department's Office of Special Education Programs is spending millions of dollars every year to train and have certified highly qualified teachers for blind and visually impaired around the country. We're also using your federal dollars, millions of them, to prepare the next generation of teacher trainers, that is, people who will have doctorates in teaching teachers how to teach kids with blind and visual impairments. Of course, this training isn't just limited to Braille. It involves all aspects of the education, including highly qualified orientation and mobility specialists. Now, the department's Office of Special Education is also issuing grants to increase the universe of accessible educational materials. This includes supporting bookshares.org, which I know a lot of you are familiar with, and the National Instructional Materials Access Center, NIMAC, which helps put textbooks in formats including Braille, text-to-speech, audio formats, enlarged text, or a combination thereof. And now, this paragraph is for people who like acronyms. We're also working to make sure that schools and publishers are staying up to date. Last month, the department issued a letter regarding Math ML3. And for those of you who don't know, that's the Mathematical Markup Language Structure Guidelines version 3, which were approved by the DAISY Consortium. And reflect the most structured, most effective method of providing accessible print instructional materials involving mathematical and scientific content to students who are blind or with print disabilities. And our letter encourages schools to ask publishers who use the Math ML3, ask publishers to use the Math ML3 when requesting these NIMAS files. Now, the last thing I want to say about this is I was here yesterday, I got to hear from the speakers and some of the resolutions that there's been a lot of concern about the Individuals with Disabilities Act, Education Act, and how its presumption in favor of Braille should be applied. The idea is based on the notion that there is no one-size-fits-all solution, that bringing parents, educators, and other knowledgeable people together is the best way to figure out what's appropriate for any particular child. On the other hand, with the support of the Federation, Congress has made absolutely clear an idea that Braille often will be appropriate for a child. Now, how to implement these competing ideals of individuality and the presumption is something that's warranting a healthy discussion. And I heard a lot of that discussion yesterday, and I'm hoping it will continue. And in fact, that takes me nicely to my third line of communication, which is the fight against misunderstandings. And a lot of times, it's ignorance, it's fear, it's stubbornness that are the foundation of discrimination against people with disabilities. And the Federation has been an amazing advocate, public advocate, for providing public awareness, for cajoling people into doing the right thing. They've been generous with their time and their efforts, both counseling large organizations and coming in and sharing their wisdom with us. And then we've tried to do the same. We issue these guidances, we do technical assistance, we do email blasts trying to train schools and universities about their responsibilities. Now, sometimes, we found basically that keeping these lines of communication open is the best way to further these goals. Now, sometimes even friends and allies can disagree, sometimes about very detailed things, and sometimes just the means to an end. But even when we disagree about specifics, we like to think that we recognize that we're all acting in good faith, that we agree on much more than we disagree, and that we have to keep these lines of communication open. So that's why I was so pleased to be invited here by John and by Dr. Moore, and that I was so pleased to be able to listen yesterday to the resolutions and the very vigorous debate and democratic debate that you all had on such a wide variety of topics, and why I'm continuing to look forward to working with the Federation in Washington. Now, yesterday, when I was here, I got to hear the man from Travelocity offer discounts on vacations, which I'm planning to take advantage of. But I thought to myself, oh my goodness, how am I going to compete with that? I don't have a secret code that's going to lower your federal income tax. But I hope that what I've talked about here about what we're doing in enforcing the civil rights laws, in trying to strategically use grants to increase scarce resources of teachers and accessible formats, and our continuing dialogue has given you something that you can take back to your families and your communities to know that we're continuing to work with you to keep the lines of communication open. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.